Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Healthy Innovators TV. Thank you for watching and we're glad to have you on board. My name is Barry Schreier and I'm your host. Healthy Innovators TV is a weekly show where we bring together a bunch of incredibly talented and passionate people who are making a difference in the world by getting involved in innovation in healthcare and technology. Healthy Innovators TV is a weekly program which is sponsored by the Giant Health Event. Giant is Europe's largest and most valuable annual event, bringing together thousands of people from all around Europe who are involved in healthcare and technology and innovation. Our vision is to improve the health and the well-being of people around the world by promoting and facilitating innovation in healthcare and supporting health tech entrepreneurs. So thank you very much to our sponsor, the Giant Health Event. Giant takes place in London every November, and if you're interested in attending, please send a message to Disruptive Live and we'll help you to get a ticket and to come to the event. Thanks once again to our sponsor. So tonight we're going to follow the normal format, which we follow every week. And what we're going to do is we're going to ask our wonderful and fabulous guests to introduce themselves. Then we're going to talk about some of the leading issues in healthcare and what are some of the challenges in society that healthcare is facing and how with technology and innovation, we can conquer those challenges and address these problems and work to make the world a better place. So once again, thank you for joining us and we're glad to have you guys with us. So please, Karen, how are you?
I'm good, thanks Barry for
nice to see you.
Inviting me. It's good to see you again. It was great to be at a Giant a few months ago.
Thank you.
So I'm currently working with Microsoft Reactor and Founders Factory,
helping
young leaders and young entrepreneurs be better leaders. I think the people part of tech hasn't always been at the forefront. And so I'm trying to do that, having had quite a long career working particularly around innovation and organizational health with companies like Unilever and WPP.
Excellent. And how do you pronounce your last name, please?
So Karen Rivoire, my husband is French, I'm a Brit.
Oh, okay.
And I spent most of my career in France, but I'm back in the UK now.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, no, as an American, I try as hard as possible not to pronounce these foreign words, and so I didn't want to completely stick my foot in it.
It's quite an easy one, so I think you could probably manage.
Oh, okay. We'll come up with a shortcut for that, if that's okay. But anyhow, so good to see you.
Good to see you, Barry.
Really happy to have you on board. Thank you. And John, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. So if you can tell us, please, how do you pronounce your last name? And tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing.
Right, so my family name is Milad.
Yes.
And my background, I'm an American-Brit hybrid. I grew up in the States and I've been working over here for the last 20 years.
Wow, sounds familiar.
So I guess I'm properly transatlantic now.
Yes.
And I'm the CEO of Quanta Dialysis Technologies.
Quanta.
Quanta, based in the Midlands by Stratford-upon-Avon.
Oh, nice.
And We consider ourselves to be poet engineers,
perfect.
We're big on innovation,
yes.
But of course we harness that with great discipline. We're working in the medical devices space, which is a safety critical, quality essential application, and we've come up with a personal hemodialysis system that gives greater freedom to patients to take control of their therapy and to dialyze in a wider range of locations, including the home,
right,
and to have much broader freedom in terms of when they dialyze.
Yes.
It gives them the power of taking control of their therapy and their lives and takes them out of a position of dependence and having to live in and out of clinics for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. Absolutely fabulous. If we could just take a step back very, very briefly for the benefit of our viewers, you used a couple of words there which everyone might not be familiar with. So what's the product? What's the hemodial? What's
right.
The word you used?
So the therapy that we provide is hemodialysis.
Hemodialysis.
Yes.
And so what's that if someone doesn't know that word?
Of course. So dialysis is a therapy for replacing lost kidney function.
Okay.
For patients whose kidneys no longer work.
Okay.
So typically patients who have chronic kidney disease,
right,
progressive disease, over time, they have less and less function and eventually it just stops working altogether.
Okay.
And unless they have some type of replacement therapy, the best and most famous would be a kidney transplant.
Yes.
But sadly, only 30 or 40% of patients will receive such a transplant because of shortages. The rest of them need to go on to artificial device-based therapy that replaces the function of the kidney. And so effectively, what we're doing is removing toxins from the patient and removing and helping them excrete excess fluid since their kidneys and excretory system no longer work.
Right. So your machine is doing that.
It does that work for them.
In the home.
In the home or wherever it makes sense for the patient to have that therapy.
Oh, fabulous. That's extremely interesting. And obviously, congratulations on what you guys are accomplishing.
Thank you.
We've already discussed this, and we're certainly hoping that you can come back, maybe in January, and bring these gadgets with you.
Oh, I'd love to show that
to you.
Love
to see them.
Thank you.
Yeah, excellent. So obviously, we're talking about innovation and issues in healthcare. And are there opportunities for technology and innovation to improve health? I guess an absolutely superb example with what you guys are doing. And we were talking about issues like in the workplace and well-being and mental health and things like that. What are some of the topics there? And are there real problems?
I believe there are, and, and I think particularly in the space that's very on trend at the moment around harassment and bullying, the Me Too platform has been an amazing platform to speak up about some of the challenges in different industries and in different workplaces.
Right.
So that's a
So there you have technology or whatever you want to call it, social media, which exists because of technology, helping to improve what? Communication and awareness of things.
I think the awareness piece is essential. We have to be careful that the social media doesn't create moments rather than movements. I think the Me Too platform has to be translated into something that becomes more every day.
Yes.
And I'm very proud to be able to say that I work with one founder in particular who's working on that specific topic around an anti-bullying tool using blockchain. So a young female founder, because I've decided to focus on female founders outside of the Microsoft program anyhow.
Excellent.
Because they need a bit more help in terms of leadership and funding.
Yes.
So that Vault platform is really trying to address some of the issues around bullying. It's an everyday thing. So I think the Me Too campaign was fabulous, and it really is a great opportunity. But
right.
We mustn't forget that it's not just about sexual harassment, it's also about microaggression and everyday
any other elements
stuff
of bullying
that needs to
which
be
aren't necessarily
addressed.
Gender
and while that's going on, people cannot be their best selves. So that's what I'm passionate about and what I've worked on for a long time. The first program I set up in Unilever back in 99 was with a psychiatrist called Dr. Eric Albert, who's now a very successful consultant in France, and that was also an emotional and mental well-being program.
Oh, okay.
Trying to help leaders understand the signals that they were sending that might affect their team's mental health.
That's
but also recognizing the signals of other people who might be in distress and somewhere on the spectrum of mental health.
Yes. I mean, the mental health thing, I think, in general, is prone to being lesser understood and addressed than physical health. I guess that's quite obvious. If you're in a car accident and your leg is broken, everybody knows what to do.
Yes.
But if you're depressed at work, it's not so obvious as a simplistic example.
Exactly, and there's a lot of stigma about it as well. But we are all on a spectrum of mental health, whether we know it or not.
Yes. Yeah, my colleagues at work are always telling me I'm well down the spectrum, and I'm not quite sure what they're talking about. But
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I won't ask.
It's not necessarily a bad thing, and then that leads on quite nicely to another topic I'm passionate about, which is around inclusion. I think part of the stigma around mental health in the workplace in particular has led to another area of exclusion, where we're not making the most of different points of view, different perspectives.
Yes.
Sadly, pain can often help you learn stuff, both about yourself but also about your environment, that makes you even more creative.
Oh, interesting.
As well. So I think we have to be very mindful of bringing those different perspectives together. So often hand in hand in the work that I've done in the past and the work I'm doing now, mental health and inclusion helps leaders also think about who they are as leaders as well, and therefore their own well-being by looking at those two topics for their teams. It helps them become more centered as leaders, and so their own health benefits from topics that benefit their team as well. So there's a very
It's a complicated web, isn't it, of lots of strong dependencies. Some may perhaps not so clear as others.
Yes,
absolutely fascinating. No, it's great to hear, and I love how again, technology sometimes can be the source of the problem, but it absolutely is a way of considering and understanding and dealing with these issues.
Yeah.
And the kind of stigma issue and the capability of technology to resolve these things, to me, is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you guys have an issue in terms of awareness? Like, for example, if one is in need of dialysis, how do they come upon your products or your services? Mm-hmm. Can technology help in promoting that? Mm-hmm. Does your brand rely on technology, social mm-hmm. media, whatever? Mm-hmm. Are those issues or not really for you?
Well, broadly, the concept of population and disease management mm-hmm. is super important in many fields of medicine, especially chronic diseases, and in particular,
sure.
chronic kidney disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so identifying patients who are candidates for dialysis
right.
Earlier on and helping them manage the trajectory of that progression is really important. And in many places around the world, that's not done well enough.
Identifying them before they know
they
have an
before
issue.
They even
or before
need
they have
dialysis.
Told the world they have an issue.
So they don't just wake up one day and need dialysis.
Okay.
They go through a multi-year progression of decreasing kidney function.
Oh.
And so identifying those people who are at risk earlier and mm-hmm. helping them manage that
mm-hmm.
and maybe changing the slope of that trajectory, that would create a lot of good for people. It might mean fewer people on dialysis, but honestly, dialysis is such a difficult therapy. I'd be delighted if that were to happen.
Sure.
Sadly, there will always be people who need dialysis.
Right.
And so our mission is to give those patients, those people, the best possible tools mm-hmm. to help them get the best possible outcomes and have mm-hmm. the best possible lives.
Nice.
I mean, our saying is transforming dialysis, transforming lives. And that is truly the mission that we live by.
Excellent.
And so for those patients who get to that point, mm-hmm. It's better to identify them, not have them what's called crashing. So if their kidneys suddenly fail completely,
right.
And they're not aware that that's happening, and they can have all kinds of problems and end up in the hospital at the A&E or the emergency room.
Oh, so very serious.
As a crash landers.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, you wouldn't have those because mm-hmm. it's a progressive disease. You should be able to see the signs and symptoms and to manage and monitor that. So a world where that's being done better would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they need dialysis, to initiate them at the right time
mm-hmm.
And to help ease them into it by doing the right things in mm-hmm. advance, that's the ideal world. And those are the best patients for us because we want the patients who have the best possible chances of taking control of their lives.
Yes.
And we want to give them the tools to do that.
Yes, exactly.
And if they've crash landed, they're not in a good place to start to do that. It's really important actually to manage that progression and to see this train coming down the tracks and mm-hmm. to do something about it.
Mm. Fabulous. No, that's so interesting. I'm just thinking, so how do you get from where we are now to where we want to be regarding the use of technology to help, for example, people, what do you call it, if you're at the earliest stages of
the disease continuum, symptoms,
spectrum.
Called CKD, chronic kidney disease.
Okay.
And as that progresses, kidney function goes down.
Right.
And it's only at the very end, so-called end stage mm-hmm. renal disease or kidney mm-hmm. disease, mm-hmm. where there's virtually no function left. That a patient needs dialysis. And that's the point where we step in.
Oh, okay. But how do these people discover their symptoms early? What can technology do to help that?
Right.
The awareness, the...
Yeah. Well, they should be screened and monitored regularly, so mm-hmm. that they should be seeing their GP.
Mm-hmm.
So in America, there's a big issue where, because there's a significant a number of people who lacks adequate medical coverage,
yes.
They don't get good... community-based care from
yes.
primary care practitioners.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're not screened and monitored. And so, they're the ones who show up in the hospital as a crash lander, for
mm-hmm.
example. So, you need to have some form of good community-based healthcare. So
mm-hmm.
identify that and
mm-hmm.
monitor that and manage that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have good options for them. So the other thing, the problem we're solving, it'll be clear, we're not solving that problem, but the problem we're solving is when a patient gets to that right point where they need that therapy,
yes, exactly.
because the kidneys just aren't doing the job well enough anymore,
mm-hmm.
To be able to bring them in and present them with options. Because right now, around the world, pretty much everywhere you go, the 99% of patients are going to be treated in one way. The doc's going to say, okay, you need to go into a dialysis clinic 3 times a week for the
wow.
rest of your life.
Wow.
It's a destination therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they get that
mm-hmm.
transplant, that's what they're doing every
Gosh,
other day for the rest of their lives,
mm-hmm.
4-hour sessions,
mm-hmm.
getting to and from the clinic. That's a good, good half hour, hour out of their day there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're counting in a time sink of like 6 hours every other day, 3 times a week.
Wow.
They call it a prison sentence. And the patients say that they feel like they're living They're living just to dialyze. And it's very demoralizing, and it's very hard, and it means they can't have a normal life.
Absolutely.
They're locked into this burdensome therapy.
Yeah.
So that's what we want to break them out of. We want to jailbreak them. We want to make it possible that if they want to, they can treat themselves at home. Mm-hmm. If they want to, they can go into some type of clinical setting and manage the therapy themselves, so they're not dependent on when the staff are there to give them the therapy.
Yes, exactly.
When we do that, then there's a lot more freedom about where and when this can happen, mm-hmm. and their lives change.
Absolutely superb. Oh, what a great story. Love to hear more about it. Thank you for sharing that. The inclusion theme is interesting, and how, for example, obviously, if you have different ways of financing the provision of healthcare, like state-run perhaps versus private insurance-run, which we see in other countries, that creates inclusion problems. And the inclusion issue seems to be also equally important in mental health and in the workplace, yeah, and opportunities for women and things like that. And again, it seems like, well, technology perhaps can play a role there. And have you looked at those types of things? And what are examples of with new technologies, whether it's our smartphones or social platforms or whatever, where inclusion can be addressed, or the challenges of inclusion can be overcome?
Yes, I think definitely embracing technology is an opportunity to solve some of the big problems like inclusion. But I think it's also an opportunity to go deeper into identity and understanding. So technology can also help us understand individuals more, but also deal with principles around transparency and fairness. So I'm looking to technology to help us go deeper into people's lives, help them understand the life they're living, and John described that really well. If we can get better at the preventative piece, I think that will help for our own longevity, but also help us perhaps understand who are the people we have around us and how can we work together with more tolerance. You know, having done a lot of work on diversity as well, it feels as if we're in a sort of a bit of a tipping point at the moment where the work we've done in the past isn't really reaping benefits.
It is, or it's not.
It's not. I am looking to technology as well.
I don't quite follow you.
Well, it means that there's a lot of troubled movements and frustration. The data isn't good, whether it be on women in boards or whether it be black people in organisations, or again, whether it be the stigma of mental health, all those inclusion topics are not, the data's not good. And yet we know the return on investment is extremely positive.
Exactly.
We know it makes for more creative teams, therefore innovation benefits directly from more inclusion. But it's we're not making any progress. So again, you know, one can look to technology most definitely, but I also look to the leaders. So I look to those companies who are building the technology to make sure that they themselves are inclusive, because if the technology is not built with multiple disciplines, multiple walks of life, multiple types of diversity, we will not solve the problems.
Right.
Or if we do solve the problems, we'll solve them in the short term, but actually create even bigger problems.
Yes.
With consequences, some of which we're dealing with.
Do you mean if, for example, if in a large corporation, you have perhaps some new platforms or technologies or something which are helping with inclusion issues or with mental health issues, but if with the introduction of these things, these systems or these platforms or these services, that if the senior leadership team aren't using them themselves or don't even understand them, or if they were implemented perhaps by the HR department or something, or if it's a trial or whatever, there's an issue there in terms of the likely success of it. That kind of thing?
The likely success, and people are just going to walk away. So if they're not included in the process of creation of the particular tool, it's the empowerment as well that John talked about from a patient perspective. That works in the workplace as well. People want to contribute. People want to be able to exercise their judgment. So if you don't include them in, I don't know, the creation of some bias training, or if you don't involve them in that, if they see it as if it's something that's developed over there, done to them, they will not, they'll break it, or they'll just walk away. And I think that's happening more and more. Even workplaces who understood their responsibility were more purposeful as well. The mission helps tremendously to attract different talent.
Yeah.
But people walk away if they don't feel as if they are included in the creation process. They will walk away, and therefore the business will not be as successful as it could be.
Exactly, like you said, all that data or the lack of data not going anywhere, and all those good intentions kind of drying up.
Yeah.
This theme of design in technology and UX, user experience, whatever it's called, is so crucial, and often there's endless lessons to be learned.
Yeah.
How does that fit with you in terms of design for use and getting patients to understand and make use of your technologies? Mm-hmm. Are these things easy, or is it an endless challenge to get the patient to do what they're meant to be doing with your kit?
Okay, so getting it right as the design authority, as the group that's making something, is not easy.
Sure.
It takes discipline and effort and planning, and it can't just be at the back end. It needs to be right from the conception. And so because we intended to bring something out that would be highly usable, easy to use, easy to train, accessible to typical patients, we had to put that right in the front end and to understand those design features and attributes that would deliver that usability. So that goes right into what we've got. And so, a lot of the stuff that most of us would commonly expect from well-designed consumer electronics. So, a flat panel touch screen with big colorful graphics and simple buttons to press.
Okay.
That went right into the design of our device from day one.
From the beginning, rather than later on the patient saying, "Oh, I don't know how to use this thing."
Exactly. And so, and our core innovation was actually putting a lot of the functionality onto a disposable cartridge. Being a little bit, maybe slightly trivial, but I think it's a helpful example. Think of the Nespresso machine and the coffee pods, and compare that to whatever it is a barista does with that giant machine. That's kind of what we're doing with dialysis. We've got a simple cartridge that you load, and we've simplified the interface so that normal people can operate and manage the therapy.
Wow. And you didn't tell us the machines make coffee. That's a fascinating innovation. No, I love that. That's proper innovation. No, that's so interesting. This design theme comes up time and again, and it's an endless challenge, isn't it? And I guess the definition of the perfectly designed product is one that doesn't have an instruction manual. You can just work it out, can't you? And so it's absolutely fascinating to hear about how important it is and how you guys add that, as you say, from day one in the design and development program of the product. Is that the same from your experience in terms of applications and workplace and mental health?
Totally. And I think there are generations coming through for whom that's a very natural, inclusive process. So I was at a boot camp last week with teens in AI, and it's amazing how those kids, they haven't been to a business school. They're teenagers. They haven't done market research. They don't understand what consumer-driven or inclusive design necessarily is. They haven't done a course on that. But they naturally get it. They naturally collaborate. And that's absolutely fascinating. They naturally reach out to their consumer group if they're working on something. They naturally try to address various SDGs at the same time. So they will solve for big sustainable development goal problems. So I think the more we include, and that for me has been something that I've learnt as I've grown up.
Sure.
We're lucky, partly I think because of the technology and the access to the world that our teenagers have today, that some of the things that I had to learn over a career of many years, they understand. So if we can combine technology, ingenuity, and the creative tolerance that that teenagers have.
Yes.
That will be magical.
Yes, excellent.
Before they lose their ethical responsibility, I mean their curiosity. I spent the summer with a few toddlers as well. My kids are grown up, so I've perhaps forgotten some of that stage. But the summer with toddlers, just the way they deal with their environment and they work and
curiosity
is absolutely fascinating. So if somehow we can harness that, I think we'd be less fascinated by robots if we spent more time understanding that innate human behavior. And that's what I love in what I'm doing at the moment. I think that the discussions around artificial intelligence, are actually helping us have better conversations about what it means to be human.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if that can help evolve better technology, but also human potential, then there will be a win-win. At the moment, I don't think that's quite balanced out. We're more intrigued by AlphaGo and trying to get better at playing chess.
Yes, exactly.
But actually, it's the human potential piece that I'm most excited about, and how technology can help augment human intelligence. And it really does help. It really does help us understand who we are. Then we have limits, I think, we have to set, and I think that's a question for both health tech, but also other businesses who are working in the HR tech space. You know, how far do we go in terms of surveillance? So we talk about preventative healthcare, but we have to be careful that that's not Big Brother. And then how far do we go in terms of implants? You know, my stop moment at the moment is, yes, let's talk about longevity, let's talk about how we can live healthier lives and use technology to do that.
Yes.
But, you know, how do we really need the implant? So, of course, there's some medical situations where we do.
Yeah.
But
no, I definitely need some brain enhancing implant. So I'm ready to be beamed up. But no, they're important points and absolutely valid. I agree with you entirely. It seems like one interesting theme is that there's an empowering opportunity in technology.
Yeah.
And in the future, instead of having to make the 4 or 5 or 6 hour trip to the, what you call it, dialysis destination three times a week, the technology is absolutely going to empower these people who need the dialysis and free them up to hopefully make a better, more interesting, creative, and more personally rewarding contribution and that type of thing. And likewise with these technologies. So absolutely fascinating. We're kind of running out of time, unfortunately, so we'll have to continue the conversation in the pub, which I very much look forward to doing with you guys. But I wanted to thank you, obviously, and an absolute joy to have you on board. And I'm humbled by your experiences and expertise and your kind generosity of sharing that with us in this episode. So thank you very much for that. We have a couple minutes left, so I just wanted to ask you guys to comment a little bit about if you have a vision for the future, relating perhaps to your product or your work or the future of healthcare and what technology might be able to do. So if you don't mind, just a little minute or two about what you feel like would be a great vision or a destination we're aiming for.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
A pleasure.
So the vision that we're working toward really is for, in our own more parochial sense around dialysis, right, is to give patients the options and tools to do what's right for them and to let them be co-pilots and participants in the management of their well-being and in the delivery of their therapy.
Excellent.
And to make sure that the tools themselves are not the obstacles, but the enablers to getting to the right place. And not every patient will want to be a home patient, and that's okay. But there are a lot who probably do and can't right now.
Yes.
And we want to make sure they have the right options. And so the technology is the enabler, and the best technology is the technology that kind of becomes invisible because it's so easy to use, because it's so ubiquitous, you don't need to think about it.
Exactly. It's not a topic for conversation anymore, like light bulbs or something like that. Yeah. Fabulous. Well, thank you for sharing that. And likewise, Karen, we'd love to invite you to share a view of the future or a vision that you have.
Yeah, so I suppose my view is for my three teenage sons, or 20-something now. I've got to stop saying teenagers.
You must have been so young when you had them.
Hoping that they have a long life of flourishing. So anything we can do to combine human intelligence and machine intelligence to enable that would be great. But I think we need to stick to the idea of beginnings and endings. What I'm not looking for is for us to prolong life forever. And I think we have to be careful about that in the longevity discussion, is that we are still talking about life with the joys of the beginnings and giving birth and birth of amazing children and endings as well. So how can we make those beginning and endings more positive for everybody on the planet?
Yeah, exactly. Which brings us, I guess, to the singularity, which is the perfect conversation for our pub talk. So, no, it's fascinating, and I agree. Thank you for sharing that. So, great to have you guys on board. Obviously, like I said, John and Karen, thank you so much. And thank you, of course, to our viewers for watching today's episode. Once again, my name is Barry Schreier, and I've been your host. This is our weekly Healthy Innovators program, and we're really pleased to have you guys as our fans and as our viewers. Thank you. Just to confirm that obviously this episode of Healthy Innovators TV is sponsored by the Giant Health event. Giant takes place in London in November. It's Europe's largest and most valuable annual event, bringing together loads of incredibly talented and passionate and capable people who work in healthcare, technology, and innovation. So if that's of interest, please let us know. We'd love to see you at the Giant Health event. Also, of course, we'd like to thank our media and digital studio production partners, Disruptive Live. They are the world's finest television production studio, and they're amazingly capable, and they're also great people, and we love working with them. So thank you to Disruptive Live for helping us to produce and publish these excellent weekly Healthy Innovators programs. Once again, my name is Barry Schreier. Thank you for watching, and we hope you'll continue to support us and watch our programs in the future. Thank you very much.